From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan, or on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, January 19th. I'm your host today, Andy Klein. Thanks for joining the conversation as we head into the new year. A widely diverse show today. We'll be hearing about a mentor youth weaving project from Lily Hope called Weaving Our Pride. Then a fascinating mini exhibit is at the City Museum right now that documents the history of Telephone Hill here in downtown. We'll be previewing this weekend's annual birthday concert from George Kuhar. And a series of classes are ahead at the Rainforest Yoga. And we're going to find out all about that. That's all ahead today. I hope you'll join me.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a eat in. Jin katka ke jin talk anakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
A little George Kuhar playing there. We're going to talk to him later. His annual birthday concert is coming up. But right now in the studio with us, we have the honor of having Lily Hope here. Lily, how are you?
Hi, just great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great. And it's really a fun kind of thing that you're working on currently and have been working on, which is Weaving Our Pride.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about this program that's happening right now.
We are partnering with Zach Gordon Youth Center and Friends of Zach Gordon and Juno Community Foundation to put together a mentorship project. It's actually a Chilkat robe and a Raven's Tail robe that'll be created for youth, by youth, and up to four queer mentors, a couple allied mentors. And I kind of brainchilded it and put it together and hold space for it. And then my five mentor weavers show up and weave.
Tell me about the process of kind of brainstorming it. Like, why? What was the need you're trying to fulfill here?
I'm recognizing that our Juno community is very inclusive. We've got a beautiful drag community, beautiful queer community, and our youth are figuring out who they are. And this is happening all over the nation. And in Juno, I just wanted to be like, hey, let's do meaningful community work together, something bigger than any one of us that can be worn and celebrated in ceremony of coming out parties and, naming parties and Pride events and non-Pride events and Native events and non-Native, all the things.
That's I hadn't put together that's what the end product or one of the end products of this is this piece of artwork that's worn, right? That's what these amazing projects that you work on are. It's telling its own kind of story.
Right.
Yeah.
It really is. We're doing a rainbow pride one that is really putting on the pride flag red through purple with those vertical lines. And then we're doing a Chilkat one that is an iconic Chilkat face. But instead of like the historic yellow or blue mask that this person is wearing, they are wearing the pride flag across their face, like as if you'd, swoosh a rainbow across your cheek. But in a traditional way, mm-hmm. but a contemporary traditional way.
Mm-hmm. And so this is something that, as you say, can be something that can be brought out in celebration for all kinds of different
Correct.
Ceremonies and parties and all kinds of different things.
Both of these robes, the Chilkat one and the Ravenstail one, both pride colors, will live in the permanent collection at Zach Gordon to be worn and utilized by youth only at Zach Gordon.
How long of a project is this to from start to finish to where it, you feel like you can call it finished?
I think we started in July of last year and we were aiming to finish both robes by June of this year. Fundraising has been really involved and laborious. Thank you to Rasmussen Foundation, who gave us a Tier 1 grant through Friends of Zach Gordon to acquire the work, which is also supporting the mentors making the work with youth. We are still soliciting for donations, but we wanted to finish both of these robes by Celebration 24. We're aiming to finish one of them by 24 and hopefully the second by 26, maybe, or maybe sooner than that. Maybe we can bring it out in 2025 and have a real pride event on the off year of Celebration.
You've talked about this a little bit before on the air here with us, but can you just do a brief on what it takes to make one of these? I know that it's so many steps to, if you could, there's a way to winnow down a little bit just to for some people to understand who maybe have only just seen them hanging and really don't know what goes into making them.
We're taking single ply bulky yarn and thigh spinning it on our right thigh. That's at least 200 hours of work before we can even start twining anything. And these are flat baskets, like Terry Rothcar, renowned weaver from Sitka, talked about Ravenstail regalia as twining a flat basket. Like, we are wearing woolen basketry because of the way that they're twined, finger twined like a cedar or spruce root basket. So very laborious, 1,000 hours for a Ravenstail robe, 3,000 hours for a Chilkat blanket. Just really intensive.
Amazing.
Work.
Amazing. Just as you say, just hundreds of hours just to get the raw materials to the point where it can then be used. Mm-hmm. Then is there a loom involved or tell me about that.
There is. There's a loom. We call it a loom, but it's a loose term. And Terry Rothcar would encourage us to use frame because it is gravity hung. There is nothing holding the bottom warps taut. It is all about our tension in the way that we twine our fingers across the work. So, yes, a loom, but shuttle. Like,
okay, mm-hmm. All right. And then it's woven through. And then is there some piece of wood or something that's pushed up and then it lines up that, or is that just all by hand?
We are all controlling that by hand. Mm-hmm. We've got some fancy devices and little quilting squares and things that drop down and like, oh, is this 7 inches over here? And that's 7 inches over there. And precision, the precision involved. But the cool thing is we've got youth coming in and they're putting in rows that are imperfect, right? We are all imperfect and they are putting in the work side by side with these mentor artists. And we're keeping every stitch that they've put in.
Tell me about the decision or how, I don't know how to put this, but I would imagine that this is such a revered artwork and seen as something that needs to be held in historic context. So what's the decision behind bringing in a new interpretation, new colors that haven't been used before? Is that something that needs to be considered or that you think about, or how does that happen? Or are you just like, hey, I know these techniques. I'm an artist. I can guide how this works and I'm going to express that in this medium.
I think it's a necessary evolution or innovation in Northwest Coast artwork and being an artist and being a person who supports my queer family, that they have to be interwoven. That is intersectionality of all of our identities of we are Native, we are queer, we are, you know, non-binary, we are whoever we are, we get to weave those together. And having this as mentored by many queer artists themselves and having space where students can come, all of their identities invited and included in the space, that's huge for our youth to be able to be like, hey, I'm figuring out who I am and I want to do this thing. And there are people that are like me that are going to hold my hand through this.
Are the use of Ravenstail blanket, is it traditional that the use is sort of a community use versus a personal use, or is it one or the other, or just maybe both? I'm wondering, like, do sometimes Ravenstail blanket, like, they belong to a person, or is it always more like, no, it's a community, it's there for, as a resource?
Yeah, I guess all of those things are true. Okay. There are definitely people who own the robe or take care of it for the particular clan. There are people of non-native descent who have robes that they bring out and dance when there are significant events. And there are definitely robes that are available that come out during parties that are, you know, someone might have 7 or 8 robes in their possession and just bring them out and robe the next person, the next dancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, it's a wide variety and sort of a moving target in a way, too. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, is there more that you want to talk about this specific thing? Because I know there's other things that are going on. I want to kind of get to other things on with you, too. But this weaving our pride, can anyone join in?
Yes.
Tell me about that sort of
you
thing.
You don't even have to be a kid. You can just love hanging out with us. We're weaving Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays from 3:30 to 6:30 down at Zach Gordon Youth Center. Youth being, you know, vaguely 12 to 24 years of age, I think-ish. But all ages invited. Please come hang out with us and witness the work and sit by us and see this come to life. We've got an eye put in on the Chilkat robe, and it is otherworldly. Like, it's such a cool experience. Then on Saturdays from 4:30 to 7:30, we have a mentor there as well. So kind of after work, bring a kid or two, or don't bring a kid, bring some pizza, don't come have some snacks, drink some apple juice, and weave with us.
And
check
do you want to mention just some of the mentor weavers that are involved?
Yes.
That'd be great. I know, of course you are.
Oh my gosh. I'm not there as much as I want to be. I'm also a professor and a mother of 5 and so many other 75 different things. I'm more the
plus
creative.
You're digging out. I saw you on the street walking, yeah, digging out for like
we're
we
digging
all are.
Out other people and
yes,
pushing cars.
That's right.
Yes, the snow has been great. We have Ray Mills, Melina Meyer, Ricky Tagaban, Hannah Schempf, and Lane Reinhardt. Shken George has popped in once or twice, but mostly that's the core is Hannah, Ricky, Melina, Ray, and Lane.
Great group of people. Mm-hmm. Wow, what a great. Just what a great activity happening, and I'm assuming no experience needed, right? Like
no.
Just an interest, and you'll
show you
how to do it. Yeah.
Yes, and you can also make a donation if you feel compelled to support the work and you don't have time or energy to weave. You can go to Juno Community Foundation and make a search for Weaving Our Pride and make a donation through them. It goes directly to the weavers and the creation of this work.
Okay, now let's talk. You mentioned that you're a professor at UAS. Let's talk about some of the classes that you're teaching.
My goodness. I'm doing Indigenous Performing Arts on Wednesdays. I'm teaching wool and button applique on Tuesday afternoons, and I get to teach Northern Northwest Coast woolen weaving, aka Ravenstail weaving, on Monday afternoons.
Can you dive into a little bit of each one of those? Wool applique.
Mm-hmm.
What is
the wool applique? Is really making button robes of the black and wool, traditionally black and red, but you know we can go navy blue and red or lime green and purple. If we want mother of pearl buttons and a lot of form line adaptation and lots of cutting with X-Acto blades.
Are you creating the mother of pearl buttons?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
That's for small children in the Mississippi River.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
No.
We have to find them on eBay.
Okay.
We will not be creating buttons.
Okay.
That is a laborious process.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering. Woo. Is that part of it too?
We do adhere them to the wool and
sure.
Use it as, you know, pops of interest or my mother was very good at using buttons, which are very expensive, to create patterns instead of using wool applique. So we'll talk about that variety.
Yeah.
But yes, you need to have a few $100 to throw at mother of pearl buttons if you're going to like just
really
use
go
buttons.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. And then the performing arts, Indigenous performing arts. Tell mm-hmm. me about that.
Well, I love storytelling. So I did share in our first class, which was last Wednesday. I got to share a little bit of my own storytelling, you know, puts a little raven in there. And it's more of a survey of performing arts than it is about learning how to do Indigenous performing arts, because we're in this sweet space of appreciating Native culture rather than appropriating Native cultures. And since we have, you know, many different languages, 13, 14 different Native peoples in Alaska alone, and then all the lower 48 Natives. We've got a few students who identify from the lower 48, somebody from the Cherokee Nation, Muscogee Nation, and we're hoping that they get to bring some of their their own presentation to the class and share about, you know, it. Performing arts includes language and regalia and voice and song and movement, gesture, not just story, not just oratory, but that whole, the everything of performance that comes to it. So we're going to learn a lot together.
Wow, that's amazing. What cool classes. Yeah. Are they already full? Or are they already?
There's a couple spots available on the both the Tuesday and Wednesday class are available. Wool regalia applique, and then the Indigenous performing arts. But weaving is full. But don't despair, because Ray Mills is offering one in April on the Road to Celebration. We're going to do a short term, like 4-week class at UAS.
And is there more? Speaking of celebration, is there more stuff you're doing to gear up for celebration? I imagine it's an incredibly
all the things. Yeah. Oh my goodness, all the things. I'm making a couple button robes, might be doing some stuff for a fashion show. I mean, it's never ending, and I don't sleep. I pretend that I'm going to sleep, and then I don't. Mm-hmm. I'm out of bed at 4:30 before children wake up.
And yeah,
some coffee and some work time.
That's your little bit of, like, you steal a couple hours there to do some stuff.
I used to have 7 days a week to make art, and this trade-off of being a professor. I love teaching, love teaching, but the trade-off of not having those 4 days a week because I'm teaching, it's pretty intense to squeeze some art-making juice out of my life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's so awesome to talk to you always. I want you just to come by every couple of weeks and just update us on what's going on in your life. Because it's always so cool. Weaving Our Pride is an ongoing project that's happening at the Zach Gordon Youth Center Wednesdays and Fridays. It goes from 3:30 to 6:30 and Saturdays from 4:30 to 7:30. And it's a collaborative identity-affirming mentor youth weaving project that's for anyone who wants to come from 12 to 24, or even maybe a little bit older, a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. whatever you want. If it sounds awesome to you, go by and go have a great time and learn a lot about what's happening there at Zach Gordon Youth Center. And then these two university classes, there are a couple of spots open for both of them. But people maybe just go to UAS online and look for either the wool applique or the Indigenous performing arts classes if you're interested in that. Lily Hope, thank you so much for coming in and just talking to us about everything that's going on. It's so cool.
Thanks,
really appreciate
Andy.
It. Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
That's more George Kuhar in the background, by the way. We're going to be talking to him in just a moment. But I want to let you know that KTOO turns 50 this January. We're marking this milestone by celebrating you, the community that has supported locally owned airwaves in Juneau for 5 decades. And as part of our celebrations, we'd love to hear how KTOO impacts you. So we're looking for audio submissions that are about 60 to 90 seconds in length, that share your thoughts, memories, driveway moments, all those personal stories about the station that we can use on the air. To submit, record your message on your smartphone and email it to junoafternoon@ktoo.org. Instructions for getting good audio can be found on our homepage at ktoo.org. And we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks. Coming up in just a second, we're going to be talking to Beth Weigel from the City Museum about a really cool new mini exhibit that's happening and has been happening at the City Museum. We'll be right back with you. Telephone Hill is once again in the news and being talked about in Juneau, and there's even a survey that the city has been asking people to fill out about the future of Telephone Hill. But a really interesting thing to know about is the history of Telephone Hill, and one of the histories of Telephone Hill has to do with this particular sound right here. That is a old-timey telephone.
Yes, it's a crank in the phone.
And Beth Weigel from the City Museum's here to tell us about that and the other stuff that's happening. Beth, how are you?
I'm great.
Great to have you here in the studio, and thanks for coming by. Thanks for bringing the sound effect.
Thanks. Yeah,
that is fun. From one of those crank that has that's wall mounted, yeah, and the microphone's on the wall, and you hold the other thing up to your ear, right?
Yep. This old box phone from the early 1900s.
Klondike 655, please.
Right. Well, there's all kinds of rules about like using those kinds of phones back in the day.
Yeah, well, those codes, Klondike was KL, right? And KL meant some city code. I think that was a New York City code.
Possibly.
Yeah, but isn't that wild that every single call used to go through a human operator? And so much of what happened on Telephone Hill was about telephone. So tell me a little bit about why is it called Telephone Hill?
Well, it's obvious that telephone exchange was up there.
Yeah.
In the old Webster house. So Bach and Webster, first owners of the Juno Douglas Telephone Company. And prior to that, the mines had telephones that they were using to connect from the mill to the main office and had lines running along. And,
you know, it may be obvious, but I've never, ever even thought of that that's what was happening up there. There was a house full of operators essentially doing
exchanges.
Well,
probably one person
yeah, or two people maybe.
One person, but in one place in Juno
on the switchboard connecting connecting lines together.
Yeah. And did you know that Alaska in Juno here, we had the first landline telephone service in the state?
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that. I know that we were really early adopters on electricity.
Yep. Around the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that first landline technology, 1889, Eastern Alaska Mining Company and Milling Company had their telephone that was between the main office and the mill so they could communicate with each other, ran along the roadside and had problems, of course.
Yeah, same problems.
And then in 1893, the Bach and Webster General Store owners in Douglas City and Juneau invested in a telephone line, and they strung that across the channel so they could communicate between the two shops. So it was it grew out of an endeavor and eventually found its way to be located up on Telephone Hill. So.
And sort of the mines were the impetus of it all,
right?
And trying to communicate between the mining offices. And mm-hmm. Was it also trying to communicate like to foremen who were at home?
It
was to the mill itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And were there, how soon was it that like phones got into homes and that sort of thing?
A little bit longer, yeah. But shortly after Bach and Webster, opened that up so they could talk to each other on either side of the channel. Then there was, other people started learning about it. The first customer was, guess who? A mining company.
Right, sure.
And then others, businesses mostly were their subscribers and had the funds to pay for that.
And could they connect outside as well? Or how long did it take for them to be able to make a call to New York?
I think that came later.
Yeah, I would assume so, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting to me that it was a company that wasn't Ma Bell.
Right.
That was it was this private company that had this little local exchange going.
I mean, really, it was like 20 years after the phone was invented.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah.
That we're starting our little phone company.
Yeah. Right.
So,
and does the exhibit go through how long that phone company existed?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in let's see, I have it somewhere here.
Your copious notes that you have. Yes.
We have all these. Did you know? So 19. Let's see. They moved out of there and went down to where, Alaska Communications is now, the ACS building, mm-hmm. eventually. But I think it was like, in the 60s or something.
Oh,
or
okay.
80s. No, 60s. Well,
so they were there for a long time.
Yeah.
This building we're in now was the Ma Bell building.
Right.
It was an AT&T building, right?
Right.
So that was connecting long distance calls as well. But
okay.
It is interesting.
1958. That's when the company moved out of the Webster House to the Main Street location, which is now the ACS. And then I think they carried on until it was sold after that. So,
yeah. Interesting. You know, it is interesting to think about how all this stuff was cutting edge technology.
Totally.
And it's just sort of like not even thought about anymore. And it'd be almost impossible to recreate it.
Yeah. I mean, we were really a forward advancing city in that way, And people who had the wherewithal could, have a telephone in their office or their home or later on in their home. And that was, a real help to them and, locating somebody. And, there's stories of, you ring the operator and want to be connected to the doctor or something. And they're like, well, I can connect you there. But, he's down at so-and-so's house at their party or whatever, So the operators really knew what was going on in town and where people were.
And all these old, I remember in my grandparents' house in North Carolina, it was a party line. right? And so-and-so down the road used to listen in, maybe, maybe not. There was rumors about that, you know, and you had to worry about that stuff. It's amazing to think about the evolution of the telephone.
Yeah. Well, but how do you think messages got across the Douglas Channel before that?
Pigeon. I don't know.
A canoe or a boat.
Sure.
They had to paddle across.
Right. So tell me now, the exhibit is about, that's the beginnings of Telephone Hill, but does the exhibit talk about all the different things that have happened on Telephone Hill through the years?
Well, basically the exhibit consists of, so around our map case area, we have the two box phones set up, and we had Jim Simard and Bing Carrillo come in, and they worked for like a day and a half to get those babies ringing.
Oh, cool.
Because, you know, it requires a connection, and they, you know, voltage goes through there.
Sure.
And it's a really neat technology. And then we have a slideshow that kind of gives a variety of images that we have in our collection and some did you knows, you know, kind of questions. And then in the community room, or where we show the video all summer long, we have some other iterations of phones, like another old, like kind of mining phone and like a bag phone, you know.
Yeah,
and,
right.
We have an old bell ringer that was like used to test lines and things like that. And we have some different images of people on phones and of phone lines strung around throughout Juneau. And then Skip Gray provided us with some great images as well. And we have one photograph early when the courthouse was still up there. And then he took two that were like, so 50 years after that in the 70s. And then 50 years later, you know, so we've got this sort of like, you know, when the courthouse was still there 50 years later and then 50 more years later. So
the 50 years, is there one where the state office building isn't there yet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But the courthouse and the courthouse is still there.
Yep.
Okay, right.
And then we have some watercolors and things like that of the courthouse. And
do you think about what a massive project the state office building was? I mean, that's such a huge building. Yeah.
That's the other interesting thing about Telephone Hill is that it was taken by eminent domain from the homeowners so that they could potentially build the new Capitol there. And there was contests and things like that to design the building. And, you know, there's some really futuristic, funny looking ideas that could have happened up there. And of course, you know, we're seeing some interesting drawings and things like that too, with the potential for how it might be developed now.
Yeah, right.
More, since it was, you know, transferred from the state to the city.
Yeah, more housing is more maybe the development that's being thought of right now. And there's these different scenarios that are out there. And I believe that survey is still active.
I think it ended on the 9th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I went and took that survey. It was interesting to take that survey and give my thoughts for what my dream of that area would be, just like everyone should. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can see it when it's just the courthouse up there, and then you can see and some, you know, watercolor paintings of that too. So it's just a neat timeline of how that hill has been. And it wasn't always known as Telephone Hill. You know, it was known as Courthouse Hill and Rockwell Hill.
Yeah,
it had some different names before Telephone Hill.
And as you say, it's sort of you have a little mini exhibit. What else is coming up for the city for people to look forward to? They're going to go check out this Telephone Hill exhibit, but what else can they look forward to that's maybe in the planning stage? A little sneak preview.
Sneak preview, yeah. Well, I just want to remind people that we will have our community art exhibit, the 12 by 12, that will open in March, but you have to kind of plan ahead for that. So if you're going to enter that, which anybody in the community can do a 12 by 12 piece of art, and it has to measure 12 by 12, even if it's framed, you know, can't do 12 by 12 and then frame it. So it has to be 12 by 12 or 12 by 12 by 12 if it's 3D. And you have to have your application in on I believe it's the 19th. That's Saturday after Valentine's Day. And then you have to turn your piece in a week later.
Okay.
But for February, we are changing the Murray Gallery. We're just closing Bonnie Lynn Parker's ceramics.
Which was awesome.
Yep.
Loved that. So such unique work. So cool.
So hers is ending here in another week or so.
So you got a week still to see it. I would recommend it highly.
Yes.
Such unique, beautiful work that you just wouldn't necessarily think about is pottery. It's just a different way of approaching that art form. It's really cool.
And then we're having the Modern Quilt Guild come in with some of their modern quilts.
Cool.
Yeah, are very different than what people think of in quilting. Often people think of, you know, the traditional ring patterns and things like that.
Which
are beautiful. But these are going to be very different and
very cool.
Super fun. So.
Well, Beth, thanks so much for telling us all about what's going on. And people can keep in mind that 12 by 12, that's February 19th. Is that what you said is the deadline?
It's the deadline for the application.
Application.
But the piece of work has to come in. And you know, bring your piece of work in then a week later.
Okay, very cool.
And if you have questions, you know, you can.
You know, there's people out there that won't even know what that sound is.
You can call us.
You can always call the City Museum. Beth, thanks so much for coming by. Really good to talk to you.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. This is a little Playboy Spaceman, one of the principal songwriters and players of that band, is with me now, George Kuhar.
Hi, Andy.
Hey, George. How you doing, man?
Excellent. Thank
Great
you.
To see you.
Nice to see you, too.
And you have your 13th annual birthday show coming up. I don't think I've missed one.
I don't think you have either.
I know. Coming up this Sunday?
This Sunday, yes.
Okay. January 21st at 7 p.m. It's at the Rookery, as it always is.
As it is.
Such a cool, little, intimate, fun way to see your music.
Thank you.
And it feels like it's all, even if people have never seen it before, it feels like you're welcoming a friend in.
Yes.
You know?
Indeed. Yeah. I love it when I see like unfamiliar faces out there, of course, but I also love seeing, you know, people who come every year like yourself and other friends. I'm also really excited about this year because the Rookery refinished their floor. I don't know if it's going to affect the sound or anything, but
can't hurt.
It looks great.
You want to play in a nice shiny place.
Right.
Sure.
No doubt.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what you're, you know, I think it's a really cool exercise to do this every year because you kind of have to think about your year's work in a way, right? And like what new you want to bring.
Exactly that. It is exactly that. I pour over like, you know, my catalog of songs and I'm like, okay, well, I know I need to play, you know, songs that I've written over the course of the year. I know that there's a few songs that I need to play because some people just want to hear them. I should play a few Playboy Spaceman songs to represent, you know, the band. And I usually want to try and throw some surprises in there. So I'll try and learn a few covers that, you know, probably you've never heard me play before. So that's kind of the agenda.
Yeah.
You know, and to have a good time, of course.
It really is great because it's like, as an audience member, it feels like a no pressure thing almost. Like it's like watching someone just kind of play to their friends and play to a small group of intimate, you know, people who are going to be accepting of whatever you try. But on your end, I'm sure it does feel like pressure, or like any performance in some ways.
Yes, in some ways, but in some ways, no, because I do try as much as I can. I mean, I do prepare some, but I try not to over prepare for this show because I do want it to feel casual and not like this is my grand performance. Blah, 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 you know,
right? I was looking back. I have some Facebook posts, you know, that those memories come up on Facebook stuff,
yeah.
And some of them are of your show. And I think back on like one of the first couple of times. I think it felt more formal in a way. It felt more like it's a gig.
Yes.
I'm presenting to the community.
Yes, that's a keen observation.
Right. And then through the years, you know, it became more and more like, oh, this feels like a welcome. Oh, another year's gone by.
Yeah.
Oh, great. We're in the depths of winter. We all get together in the Rookery and see each other. Maybe we've dug out, you know, the snow. Right?
Our mutual friend, Jamie, you know, he's told me before that like for him, it's a mile marker, you know, like, and then like, you know, you go through the holidays and then New Year's and then, you know, what is there, you know, before the Super Bowl or Valentine's Day? Like, right. Oh, there's George's birthday show. So yeah. I really appreciate that. I what else could you want but to be, you know, a part of the community in that way?
Yeah.
Where people look forward to something that you do on a regular basis.
Well, speaking of new music, you've got some new music on your KuharTheRecord.com is the place to go to check out what George is up to.
Yeah, this is fairly
lately.
New. Actually, I put this album out in February of 2020, which was a great time to put an album out.
Yes.
And plan some shows. We were all a little naive then. I want to give this one another little push here, you know?
Yeah, so we got a track off of this called Blessings. This is This Old Farmer. That's the name of the entire... is that right? Do I have that right?
No.
This is called Songs in the Key of Blessings.
No. That's actually good try. It's an unwieldy title.
Oh, Songs in the Key of Q87.81.
That's an ICD-10 code. If you work in healthcare, you know what that is.
I see. Okay. Yeah. All right. And it's also called Blessings.
Blessings is kind of like
the
sub theme. And the title track is Blessings and... Yeah, we'll play that.
All right, let's listen to a little Blessings. This is George Kuhar and a little bit of a taste of what the type of great stuff that you hear at his annual birthday show, of which the 13th is coming up this Sunday at 7 p.m. It's playing at the Rookery Cafe. And we'll come back and talk to George a little bit more after we listen to some of Blessings.
Ask for a lot tonight, my head is so high, so high the thought of waiting for blessings, your blessings. I'm wild.
Blessings, one of the newer releases from George Kuhar, who's with us in the studio. And George, listening to that, it's kind of, it reminds me that's got multiple instrumentation in it.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that you sometimes work in. Sometimes Bridget joins you as well on the birthday party. Sometimes you've got a keyboard and a harmonica and a guitar and all that stuff.
That's true. Yes.
Tell me about the decisions that go into deciding how you're going to perform and what you're going to do every year.
Oh gosh, that's a tough question. I don't know. I that's kind of the thing I feel out, where it's like, like we said, like taking stock of what I've done over the course of the year. Like I'll just go ahead and say, like, over the past year, I've played like zero piano. So I'll probably just be bringing my guitar this year.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And you just got back from a what's also become a yearly tradition or a trying to make it an annual tradition.
I would love it to be a yearly tradition. The band Playboy Spaceman, me and Bridget's band that we have with Simon Taylor, Jason Messing, and Nick Wagner. We met up in Tucson for the second year in a row to work on some songs. And we had a great time, as we did last year. We had an even better time this year because we got a lot more done, and we were a bit more prepared because we had already done it once before. And we were really happy with the work we were doing. So, that feels satisfying. We were working on the same songs, the exact same group of songs we did a year ago. So it was kind of basically like we demoed them for ourselves in January of 2023. We came back in January 2024 to actually track them.
And so you go down and you rent a house.
That's right.
That also serves as a rehearsal space and a studio space.
Yeah, it's kind of a large house, which is nice. It 4 bedrooms. Bridget and I share a room, and everybody else has their own room and their own bathroom. Spend a surprising little amount at Costco to feed us all for a week. Down south Costco, it's different.
A flat of refried beans, and you're pretty good. Good.
That's all we need.
And beer budget, of course, and then that's it. You're a band after all. It's rock and roll. Come on.
There is that. Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool, and that's what a cool way of being able to work on and kind of feel like you're doing justice to the songs and giving them time and doing them in a way and experimenting with how you want them
right,
to do.
Yeah. I mean, because the worst thing that you can experience, you know, as a creator is like being somewhere where you're spending a lot of money and the clock is ticking, you know, and like, that's stressful. Of course, we did spend money on the rental. That's true. But just having the whole day open to us, you know, for 9 days, nothing else to do. You know, we're all away from our jobs and our families and everything. Nothing else to do but relax, you know, just hang out, talk to each other, drink coffee, look at the amazing saguaros that are in Tucson and play music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Wow. What a great way of doing it. Well, let's play another track as we head out. Once again, we're talking to George Kuhar. His 13th annual birthday party is happening this Sunday. It's at 7 p.m. It's at the Rookery. Travis at the Rookery is going to open doors at about 6:30 or so, you're saying?
Yep,
and there's beer and wine available, plus, of course, great coffee and all the great stuff that you can get at the Rookery normally. You can get there. And so it's a really fun show. I can't recommend it enough. It's something I almost don't want to recommend it because I like
recommend it. Do it. What are you waiting for? Recommend it.
It does seem to pack out. It does seem to, you know, sell out quite often.
Don't let that stop you
but
from coming.
But don't let it stop you from coming. By the way, it's a free event, but contributions are welcome. Is that correct?
That's welcome. I never charge a cover for my birthday show.
No, right. So it's always nice to pass the hat around and contribute to incredible original live music in Juneau is something that I think we all can get behind and makes Juneau a great place to live. And George is one of the premier people making great music in Juneau. So I always think it's great to contribute to that. George, what should we listen to? Another track from Blessings? What would you like to hear?
Let's listen to In My Window. This has got to be my most played video on YouTube.
Oh, all right.
Somehow it got over 10,000 views. I don't know how.
Yes.
I don't know how, but it's a really cool music video. If you get on YouTube and go to at George Kuhar, you can find In My Window.
Who did it?
Ryan Cortez, Gemini Waltz Media. He filmed it. We actually filmed it at the Rookery on my birthday in 2019. It
involved a dance, kind of an amazing dance thing happening. It was really
my friend
cool.
Marisha choreographed it. Of course, Ty and Haley do the dance in it, and I'm in it a little bit too. And there's a few scenes in it from the actual live performance. Anyway, it was a lot of work, but also a lot of fun making it. And it's a pretty cool video. I like it.
Yeah, well, very good. Well, this is called In My Window. It's from I'll just call it the Blessings.
Sure, why not?
But it's songs in the key of Q87.81.
That's right.
Blessings is the name of the last album that George put together. Working on a Playboy Spaceman album now.
Yes.
Sounds like you got some songs in the can that are ready to go pretty soon. Or at some point. No pressure.
Hopefully sometime this year.
No pressure.
Thanks.
and then this one's In My Window. Once again, it's George Kuhar. Go see him. He's playing 7 p.m. at the Rookery Cafe. You can go check it out starting at 6:30 to get in there, get your drink, and get your seat. And you'll enjoy a nice, really amazing couple of hours of great music and great community in Juneau. I love it. George, love you. Thanks so much for
coming in,
man. And here is In My Window from George Kuhar. Thank you.
need right now are her blessings at my window. Will they continue to grow? Nothing can replace flowers on my face. I want to be there when our mysteries unravel. How far have I traveled to simply cast away in the ocean galaxy?
George Kuhar from his latest release. That's called In My Window. And George will be playing Sunday at the Rookery. Well, we're trying to join Rainforest Yoga, who are patiently waiting while we connect. Pam and Mary, do we have you online?
I can hear you. I don't know if you can hear me.
We can hear you. Thank you for your patience and getting us connected there. Sorry, we just had the audio connected incorrectly for a moment. But am I talking to Pam or Mary or both?
Well, you're talking to Mary right now, and I'm not sure. I guess Pam should be on.
Okay, let me just make sure that we get Pam on as well. Sorry, some of the foibles of doing Zooms. Pam, hopefully you're on as well right now.
I just now got on. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, thanks. Sorry about the delay, folks, but Rainforest Yoga, membership-based nonprofit yoga studio here in Juneau. You've got a bunch of really cool classes coming up from lots of different cool teachers. So we've got a few moments here to just let people know all about what's happening at Rainforest Yoga.
Great.
All right.
So tell me a little bit about some of the classes coming up from local teachers.
Mary, do you want to go ahead and speak?
Sure. I'll start with it. So my thinking is it's really cold outside, but we have this wonderful, nice little warm studio, and we have a bunch of things that we're offering. And so we really appreciate you letting us talk about them. You know, just like many of the nonprofits in town, we had kind of a rough go during COVID, and we're inching our way back, and we're able to offer some more. So here's some of the things that we're doing. And we couldn't have done it without our membership and the member support of the community. So we, again, really, really, really appreciate this. So,
well, I just got to say thanks to you guys for sticking through it all and making sure that that resource is still available. It did seem like, obviously, we're having to curtail our activities, but now we're back to where we're ramping back up. So, yeah, let's start with Jane Stokes is teaching beginning Tai Chi. Is that one of the things coming up?
That's one of the things coming up. And all of the things that we're going to talk about, if you go onto our website, rainforestyoga.org, you'll find all of this and other information. So we're just going to go through some things. Jane Stokes teaches beginning Tai Chi on Mondays from 3 to 4. So if you've been interested in it, it's a really good way of gently starting an exercise program, kind of focusing your brain along with it. So that's a really nice thing. Bailey Scott teaches a yin yoga on Mondays from 5:30 to 7. And I personally, this was something that I had stumbled onto by accident and then wondered why I was holding these poses for a really long time. And it turns out that yin yoga has a whole different kind of philosophy and projection. You hold your poses. And I was quite unsure about it at first, but I have come to love it because it makes me feel really strong and very peaceful. So that's Mondays, 5:30 to 7 with Bailey Scott.
And that's such a cool, you know, what you're pointing out is just such a cool thing to, even if you're someone that has practiced yoga in certain disciplines before, trying new approaches, there's a whole world of approaches out there that that people can try. So I just think having these different classes is such a cool opportunity for people to try something new.
I absolutely agree with you. Tammy Davis has been a stalwart through COVID. She has a Sunday class from 10 to 11:30 in the morning. It's a mixed vinyasa yoga where she does a lot of core work, a lot of different poses that are sometimes a little bit more strenuous than you might find like in a gentle yoga, which Kylie Heth teaches a gentle yoga class on Thursdays from 6 to 7. And if it's kind of getting toward the end of your week and you really need something to kind of tamp yourself down, this is a good way to just kind of, I used to always think of it as kind of calming the little monkey inside my brain. You know, it's
you've
just
got
kind
one of those too.
Yeah, I do. So it was like, oh boy, this is good.
Okay.
We've started this already, but it's on Fridays from 5:30 to 6:30. And her name is Cindy Brown Mills, and she teaches de-stress with breath work. And there's a whole bunch of research that's out there now about how breath work, and it's not just, you know, like breathing in, breathing out, or even, but doing some really deep breathing, some rapid breathing can help with stress and anxiety and those sorts of things. And so it's a relatively new thing that we've started, but I think it's a really valuable and very interesting, again, another offering that we offer to people. It's on Fridays again at the end of the week when you need something to get rid of all the stress from the week. It would be a very interesting, an interesting class to take, I think. And she's very gentle and she's very thoughtful and she works the room as far as being aware of what's going on. So, and then we have Pam Garcia, who's the other person on the Zoom, who teaches restorative yoga from 4:30 to 6 on Sunday. And restorative yoga, I'm going to let Pam talk about that.
Oh, okay. I've also taught it a few Fridays for First Fridays, but yes, 4:30 to 6 o'clock on Sundays. And restorative yoga is about the use of props to gently open your body. So it's not about stretching. It's about opening your chest, your hips, your shoulders through the use of props and really getting into a deep, restorative, relaxed state, which settles down the nervous system, can really help bring inflammation down, blood pressure down. It can be quite therapeutic health-wise when we bring our parasympathetic system down in a very relaxed state. And that's what restorative yoga is. No yoga experience necessary. It really is quite restful.
Well, I have to apologize because we're running out of time, but I just wanted to mention also that I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's also Bev Ingram's going to be offering a 4-class series. Is that correct, incorporating mindful movement? And that's going to be happening from February 7th through the 28th. So that's something to keep in mind. And then also there's going to be some workshops coming up in the year. And one to save the date for is March 15th through the 17th. There's a workshop from Orcas Island. I'm sorry, we're running completely out of time. Yeah. And that's it for Juno Afternoon.